welcome to Blind Like Me. It's Phil Parr, and our guest today is Charlotte Osborne. And I've forgotten where you folks live, Charlotte.
We live near Birmingham, Alabama, in Irondale. And it's just a little suburb, you know, just right around the city of Birmingham.
Yeah, but you were actually, are you, this is like a suburb of Birmingham? Are you part of the city?
Right.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's, you know, like in the addresses, we can either have Irondale on our mail or Birmingham.
Okay, all right, I got you.
And get the, you know, it's just a suburb, but it's, if they keep on, you know, we may actually be Birmingham, and I hope that doesn't happen.
Ah, not much you can do about it.
That's true.
Big cities, these earphones won't let me adjust. Now, Ken could tell you about that. If your earphones aren't right, nothing's happy. You're nobody's happy.
Oh, I know.
I guess you do, being married to a radio guy. This is Ken Osborne's wife. Ken, we had on, I guess, 6 months ago. And Ken does a lot of production work and worked in radio for a good while and does production for whomever calls. Has a Hollywood agent, doesn't he?
He has an L.A. agent, yes.
Yeah, an L.A. agent. That's Hollywood, and it's like Irondale and Birmingham. same kind of thing. And how long have you all been married?
We've been married for 35 years.
35 years?
Yes.
Well, I'd say it's going to take.
I think so.
I think you probably got something good there. 35 years. I didn't realize that. So you all got married right out of shortly after high school then.
Exactly. We were both 20 years old.
And so you've just
we were kids.
You've just told your age, Charlotte. I hate to tell
I know
you.
I did, but that's okay too.
What is your level of vision? Do you have any vision at all?
I have only a little light perception. I used to have more, but, you know, it diminishes.
Yeah, but you never had vision where you could drive a car or any of that.
No.
You've always
absolutely.
Been...
Well, I was one of those babies that was born prematurely.
Uh-huh.
Forever 13 weeks, stayed in the incubator for about that length of time.
Uh-huh.
And had too much oxygen.
Too much oxygen.
Killed the optic nerve.
Yeah, I've talked to so many people that same thing happened to. Of course, we've discussed it 1,000 times. If they hadn't done that, then you wouldn't have survived. You wouldn't have lived.
That's right.
Period.
Even so, they told my parents that I probably would not survive the night.
Yeah.
The first night, and so.
But you did survive the night and survived 50-something years. Beyond that, so you've never had any much more vision than you have now, really.
No.
Did they send you as a child to a blind school, or what did you?
Yes, I went to the school for the blind in Talladega, here in Alabama, at the age of 6.
Yeah.
And I was my parents allowed me to just be me.
Uh-huh.
Other people put more limitations on me than they did.
Uh-huh.
They made sure I was safe, but they let me have freedom. And I was in the middle of 3 brothers.
Oh, boy.
So, and there were lots of kids in our neighborhood, and so I was included a lot. And my mother used to get a lot of phone calls from people saying, Miss Calvert, your daughter's up in a tree. We're afraid she's going to fall. And Mother would say, well, she'll be fine.
I agree with Mama Blanky.
I mean, you know,
yeah.
My two older brothers were like 9 and 11 when I was born, and my younger brother's 13 months younger than I am. And the two of us were just inseparable and into everything, and he taught me a lot, and I got him in a lot of trouble. But, you know, when it came to climbing trees, he had the accident. I didn't.
I knew that
I had to be careful.
I don't believe a blind child is any more likely to fall out of a tree than a sighted child. Why would some? I don't know why people would think that.
I know. I think we're less likely because we know we have to be careful.
Yes.
We pay more attention to what's going on. For instance, one day the two of us were out climbing trees, and we had three trees that grew along the fence on the side of our yard.
Uh-huh.
And the middle tree was my tree, and it was shaped in a way at some of the branches that was like a seat. But there were two other trees, and they were really tall and steep, and they didn't have the lower branches so much. And we were out climbing one day, and my younger brother climbed the tree in front of, down the fence in front of me. And he climbed too high and
yeah.
got out on a branch, and the branch broke, and he fell.
Yeah, that'll happen.
And so, you know, I'm going and getting Mom and telling her, you know, Greg fell out of the tree, Mom. He's hurt.
This is the little blind girl who everybody thought would get hurt going in and getting rescue in the sight, her sighted brother.
Yeah.
I love it. I love it. Great story. Good thinking. You know, but it's like woodworking. Everybody says, how do you keep from cutting my hands? And I keep from cutting them because I'm real careful. Cause I know
what you mean.
I know I can get hurt very easily. So you had a pretty good, what you would kind of consider a pretty normal childhood.
Cause, yes, I did.
Because you had a little vision, and you had enough that maybe they didn't exclude you, or maybe they let you play ball, and they let you do, you know, you were just one of the kids in the neighborhood.
Right.
Yeah. And
I was.
No sisters, just all brothers, boys?
No sisters, all brothers.
All brothers. All right.
Girl cousins, and, you know,
uh-huh.
but there were lots of girls in the neighborhood, but,
yeah.
you know.
But things changed when you were 6 years old and they sent you to the school for the blind. I guess your parents
yeah.
didn't live, how far, where they lived far enough away?
We lived 80 miles away from the school.
Uh-huh.
And I started the school in 1959, and I would go home on weekends every 2, 3, 4 weeks, depending on whatever happened.
Uh-huh.
You know, and having the other three children, they had a lot of other responsibilities, and sometimes the car didn't do what it was supposed to do, so they couldn't come and pick me up. And
you were born in 50, I think 53, is that 52. Right?
52. 52. Right.
53, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. So 59, 80 miles was still a good distance in 1959.
Yes, it was, and there were no interstates and all, you know, the highway system. Over the past 35, 40 years has
yeah.
really changed.
Yeah.
There were a lot of...
a lot of two-lane roads. A lot of
yeah.
little small two-lane country roads that you know, ride around with the windows open. You didn't think about air conditioning. You just ride along 40 miles an hour with your windows open and the air blowing through the car. I was alive then. I remember.
We could probably go from my parents' house to Talladega now in an hour and a half or so.
Or less.
Or even less,
yeah.
and it was like well over 2 hours.
Yeah.
When we traveled then.
And they had to come get you and then make it back to home. So it was an all-day deal.
Right.
When they came and fetched you.
Mm-hmm.
What? How did you like the blind school? Did you take to it all right? I guess they had dormitories.
I took to it great, but, you know, it was a real shock for me.
Yeah, it is. I know, it is.
For one thing, I mean, you know, they told me that I was going there.
Yeah.
But, you know, nothing in my experience had been anything like going away from home and staying for that length of time.
Oh, yeah.
I did go and... I stayed with a great aunt and great uncle a lot just because I liked to go there. And they allowed me a lot of freedom like my parents did, whereas both sets of grandparents didn't quite know what to do with a handicapped child.
Yeah.
And they wanted me to sit down and be still, and I was a precocious child. I wanted to know everything.
Uh-huh.
And... my great aunt and great uncle allowed me to explore their farm, and they lived on I guess they had 40 or 60 acres then.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I learned a lot.
I imagine.
There.
and they were willing to let you do that. But being away, from, being with your aunt and uncle is nothing like being with 200.
No. I enjoyed being there and then going away and living in a dorm full of all of these strangers.
and you had never been around any other blind people before, had you?
Only one other. I had a cousin who was 10 months older than I, but she also had some mental disabilities. You know, they told our parents, those of us with retinopathy of prematurity, they told our parents that we could have several problems as a result of that. Which could either be blindness or hearing loss or mental problems. And she had the blindness and mental problems.
Oh, yeah.
They don't know why she had both. And then, you know, here I come 10 months later and I'm blind.
But you'd never been around any weak, I hate to call them normal, but really just
normal
blind.
Yeah.
Yeah, normal, because we're not normal, most of us. Blind, just other blind kids. So I'm sure that was quite a shock.
It was.
Start teaching you Braille, did they?
Yes, they did. They started teaching me Braille and started teaching me, you know, a lot of different concepts and learning to do all these things for myself and on my own. And I had no problem catching on to all of that.
Yeah.
And there was a student in my class who, as we learned Braille, became an excellent reader. And all the way through school, we competed. And he was always sure that he would always be ahead. But I ended up being the valedictorian of our class, and he was salutatorian.
You're not talking about Ken, are you?
No.
No.
Okay. No, Ken was actually behind me, and he came. He went to school in Florida for a couple of schools there before they moved. They lived in Alabama, and they moved to Florida, and then they moved back here.
Okay.
And we met when he was in the third grade, and I was in the fourth grade, and we did not like each other at all.
But there was this other student that always thought they could get ahead of you. But you were you were valedictorian of the class.
Yes.
And this other one was salutatorian. Well, that's good. So you were academically, you did well in school.
Yes, I did. I enjoyed school. I enjoyed reading. When I was in the third grade, the teacher we had at the time would go and get books from other classes for me to read because I'd read everything that she had. And she came to me one day toward the end of the year and she said, "You have read everything that I can get for you through the sixth grade. You need to slow down a little."
Well, I don't think so. Now, is this, you were reading this in Braille?
Yes.
So you're a Braille reader. You're a good Braille reader.
Yes, I love Braille.
Is that right? That's good.
Oh, yes.
That's good. Some of us do, some of us don't. I'm one that don't. But I'm glad you do. You and Susie Barnes. She's an excellent Braille person. You haven't met her yet, but you will this November. Y'all are coming.
Actually, I met Susie. Ken and I went to the Alumni Association meeting that they had in Tennessee last summer in June. They had asked Ken to... He spoke for during one of their meetings. I don't remember all the details. A lot happened since then.
I remember her telling me about that.
I met Susie and I met Clifford Wilson.
Well, good. You'll see them again in November. I assume y'all are coming to Houston in November. You know we're having.
I hope we can.
Well, I hope you can too. I want to visit with Ken some. He and I have a lot in common. We're both radio nuts.
That's a special breed.
Well, there's a lot of us. There's a whole lot of us.
Oh, yeah.
I've discovered a whole lot of blind people that are just crazy about radio. So you did good in school. You participated in high school, I guess, did they have a debate team or anything like that for you to do?
I think they had had one, but they did not have it when I was going through. high school, and I think now they have it again, and I think that's a wonderful thing.
Oh, I do, too. I think it's great. But you did high school fine and graduated from Talladega, from the Alabama School for the Blind.
Yes.
All right, here
and
comes.
And I went to college, but I didn't stay.
Well, here comes my next question. What did you think you could do at age 18 as a totally almost totally blind girl? What did you want to do? What did you think you could do?
I really didn't know what I wanted to do, other than the fact that I wanted to get married, have a family, but I also wanted to do something else. And all my life, during my school years, all my teachers wanted me to be a teacher.
Yeah.
And then there were those who wanted me to go on. I loved the library, of course, because of all the books. And I spent time in the library with a couple of blind friends, a blind couple who lived in Talladega. And they would come and get me and take me to their house, and they introduced me to a lot of things.
Uh-huh.
And he was a librarian, and they wanted me to go on and become a librarian at the Library of Congress, which I thought about.
Yeah.
And considered. But you know what? I'm a Southern girl, and I'm a homebody,
yeah.
And I just couldn't see myself in Washington.
Yeah.
So, I did start to Jacksonville State University, and I started to go into the library science. And, you know, I was sitting in class one day, and I thought, gee, I just can't do this for 4 years. This is just not what I want to do.
More than I can do for 4 years.
Yeah. And so I decided not to do that, and during the time I was having some health problems, and so I dropped out of college, and I went back home, and I stayed there for 6 months, and I did a lot of things I'd never had time to do, did things I wanted to do, but I also explored my options with a counselor as to what I could do and what was interesting to me. So I decided to go back to Talladega and go to the E.H. Gentry Technical Facility, and I took medical transcribing.
Yeah.
And became certified, and I got a job in Gadsden, Alabama at the Holy Name of Jesus Hospital, which was a Catholic hospital at the time. It is now Riverview Medical Center. And I loved the work. The only thing that I did not love was the fact that then someone else had to proofread my work.
Yeah.
And, you know, all we had then was correct type to correct errors. And, you know, the computer is just so much better.
Oh, yeah.
Because you proofread your own work, and you make your own corrections. But I love the work. Medical stuff has always just been fascinating to me.
Yeah, so, that was a lucrative way for a blind person to earn a living, was medical transcription. I know a couple people who did well at it.
Yes, I've got some friends who also did that and did really well with it and worked in it for a lot longer than I did. What happened was I went there, got the job in September of 1972 in Gadsden, and Ken at the time was going to Gadsden State Junior College, where he got his degree in broadcasting. And so he was at college there, and we got married in December of that year, and I was working at the hospital. And then when he got his first radio job, it was in Butler in South Alabama. So, of course, you know, that meant that I had to notice there. And
it was time to move.
Right. So we moved to Butler.
Yeah.
And we were there for 3.5 years. And during that time, our twin daughters were born. So guess what I did? I stayed home.
But you did, you were able to, you said that your main interest really was having a family.
Yes.
And so you got to do that.
Yes.
And you got some education on top of all that, and you're a great Braille reader. So you had twins?
Twin girls.
Twin girls.
Yes.
Man, I tell you what, that's a handful. Would have been a...
Oh, yeah, it was like, you know... You think you're going to get one? Ha ha. And you get two.
Well, see, you and Susie have something in common. She had twins also.
Yes, I know she did.
I guess y'all talked about that.
Right, we did.
That would be, it would be pretty difficult on a blind person to handle one child, much less have the burden of handling two. That'd be pretty hard on you.
Well, later, when our twins were 4 years and 5 months old, we had another daughter.
Uh-huh.
And I'm telling you, one was a whole lot easier than two. But,
oh, yeah.
let's just say we had kids galore, you know.
Well, but by then, the four-year-old was those four-year-olds were able to help you a little bit, weren't they?
Well, they could, but, you know, I chose not to make that, necessary unless, you know, as she got a little older, I did. I let them help, but,
Because they were out of diapers,
I mean, you know,
by then.
One day I was on the phone with my cousin who had a newborn of the same age as our youngest child, and one of the twins picked Deborah up out of her bassinet and came walking across the floor with her, and I'm like, oh my gosh, I thought I'd have a heart attack.
Could you see well enough to see that?
No, but I heard her pick her up.
Oh, you heard it.
Yes, I didn't say anything until she got to me. And then when she got to me with the baby and I took the baby, I said, you should never do that. And she was just as serious as she could be. And she said, but Mommy, I would never hurt her. You know,
yeah.
So...
Yeah.
Which I knew that she wouldn't intentionally.
Oh, no, she wouldn't intentionally, but she wasn't big enough to be carrying a baby around, was she?
No, she wasn't.
All right, so you never worked anymore. That was the end of your working.
I didn't work anymore until the girls were grown.
Okay.
And then I went to computer school when our youngest daughter was a senior in high school. I got back into medical transcribing. I took a refresher course, and it was fabulous because I took it with someone here in Birmingham at a competitive place with other sighted people. And, you know, there were other blind people in the class, but we all were competing with sighted people doing the work.
And
I had a great time. I had a wonderful time learning to use the computer after I got over being terrified of it.
And they had screen readers on these computers for you? So that you could...
Yes, they had JAWS on their computers, too.
Well, I imagine you did well, and as it turned out, that was a wonderful thing. You didn't know that at the time, but the way things have worked out, it's wonderful that you learned computers.
Yes, it is, because, you know, Ken does not like computers. He'll be the first to say so.
That's what
he
understand. That's what I understand. He doesn't get along with them too well.
No, I think he thinks they're out to get him or something. But he finally realized that he was going to have computer work in the business, and so rehab helped him get the studio put in our house. At the end of the year that I... Let's see. At the end of the year that I went to computer school and went back into medical transcribing, and I continued to work in medical transcribing for another couple of years. But...
And then his business
decided that he had to have somebody to do the computer work for the business.
Yeah.
And he talked to the rehab people about it, and they were not happy with, and neither was I, with the pay that I was receiving for the work that I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so they said, okay, you know, we'll help her get set up to work for you if you will put her on the payroll. And he was like, well, sure, you know.
Yeah, but you got to earn enough money to put her on the payroll.
Mm-hmm.
The deal is you got to do enough production to, that you got a payroll to put her on.
Right.
That's,
exactly.
I know about that.
So that all worked out.
Yep.
And we really have done well, and we enjoy working together.
Yeah.
It's flexible. So that also, as our little grandson is 7, and we kept him a lot until he was about 3 and a half when they put him in daycare. But, you know, because he began to be kind of bored. And
yeah.
Especially when we were all working.
So Ken does the production, and then he, when he finishes and he's happy with the product he's done, he plays it, and it comes through the cable to your computer.
Right. We have a shielded cable that runs from his equipment downstairs in the studio to my computer, which is upstairs.
Yep.
And he called me, and I set up SoundForge, and we record the material into that, and then, you know, I process it and send the work on to the clients. I also do his email correspondence and anything that involves the computer, I do it.
Yeah. Now,
sometimes he has to come up and listen to messages and stuff like that people send, because he has to make the decision, but as to what he wants to do about it. But
now, you take this piece of production, and do you add things yourself? Do you add compression or reverb?
No, I have not gotten into the editing.
Yeah.
We have a really good friend who we're hoping one of these days we can work with and get more into that, but we have not done that yet.
Yeah. Now you email commercials to radio stations, to agencies, to whomever wants it.
To the clients, and then they send them to whoever they want. Whoever's going to run them.
Do you compress? Do you make the MP3 file, or do you send them as waves?
Yes, I make the MP3 file.
128 stereo.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because if you sent them as WAV files, they'd be huge.
Yes, they are. And, you know, it's really annoying. A lot of people are starting to want WAV files.
Yeah.
But they just don't work well.
Well, they're too big.
But you know why they want them, don't you?
They think they're going to sound better.
They look better on they're bigger on the screen.
Yeah.
They look better.
Yeah.
They don't sound any better.
No, they don't.
From what we have seen.
They don't. From what I've heard, I do the same thing. I do radio production for a couple of radio stations, and I MP3 compress the file and send it to them. And you can't tell I wasn't there. You can't tell I didn't do it in their production room.
I know. I understand.
I've got stuff this afternoon to do, and I'm going to compress it 128 stereo and send it to them, and it'll be, you'll never know the difference. But I guess, and you think clients like it because the WAV file looks better.
Right. Well, people that Ken worked with have told him, you know.
Yeah.
It just looks so and so on the screen.
Yeah.
Looks so much better on the screen.
Yeah.
That's what they're basing that on, but it doesn't really sound any better at all.
I don't know that you could tell the difference if you put them side by side. I never have. And Tim Cummings would argue with us, but what does he know? No, he knows a lot. He's a good friend of mine. And so that's what you do now, and you all do enough business to sustain. I mean, for him to put you on the payroll.
Yes.
Well, that's good. You can't beat that. Kids are grown.
No.
Kids are grown. Only you and Ken in the house.
Right, just us at home now. And
yeah. Where are you kids? Where are you twins?
They are nurses, and they're in the area here.
Uh-huh.
They're RNs. And our younger daughter has a degree in human resource management.
Really?
And she works in Atlanta.
And none of them have any eye problems at all?
No. Well, Jennifer has a little bit of nearsightedness, but, you know, no big deal.
No big deal.
That's serious.
Well, all right, Charlotte, we're going to go and let you go tend to... Ken's been a little under the weather lately, right?
Yes, but he's feeling better today, and I think we have work.
You do have work.
But we, you know, we also do... He does commercials. He does in-house and video presentations, you know, narrations for various things.
He does whatever somebody wants him to do.
Right. If it involves talking.
If it involves voicing, well, he's there to do it.
That's correct.
Well, that's good. Do you know the offhand? There's Ken has a website. I've gone up and listened to some of his production. Do you happen to know offhand that website?
Yes, his website is mightypipes.com.
Mighty Pipes, all one word.
Yes, it is.
.com. MightyPipes.com. You can go listen to some Ken Osborne production. Charlotte, I don't
know. Yes, and they have a number of reels there, you know, that they call it. They're listed as tape reels on there.
Yeah.
And the guy who did it, who created the website, did an awesome job. He is also, he's done a little bit of everything. I mean, he's doing a lot of national stuff and all this stuff, but he's a great guy. His dad used to be on TV years ago in this area and had a children's program in the afternoon, but he did all kinds of other stuff. So Kyle really is into all the voice work and a lot of other stuff as well.
Yeah, I went up and looked at the website. It's easily accessible by blind people, so go MightyPipes.com. Charlotte, thank you, ma'am. I don't know when I'll run this, but I'll be in touch and let you know. And you tell Ken hi, all right?
I surely will.
Well, thank you. I'll visit with you.
Okay.
Thanks. Bye-bye. It's Blind Like Me is the name of our little show, and this is a little different. We are on the new Out of Sight community, Talking Place. Lynn will tell you more about that. And we're using one of their rooms, and we couldn't get the full duplex to work. We'll have to work on that. But so we're having to do the hold down the key trick, you know, where you... That's how you talk in these rooms. You hold down your control key, and you can talk to each other. So we're going to do that. And let me introduce our guest. Her name is Lynn Miller. Lynn, those of you who were on the other side, remember her. She had a show over there that she did for a number of years. She's moved over here and is doing On Stage on Saturday nights. And we'll talk about more about the site in just a minute. But Lynn, tell us about, we always ask this, tell us about your level of vision and what they decided to do with you when you were a child, 6 or 7 years old, and it was time to send you to school. Lynn Miller, everybody.
Good morning, everybody, and good morning, Phil. Well, Phil, I did not lose my sight until I was 28 years old, so... I went to, you know, I had no vision problems at all until I was 28 years old. And I was married and had 3 children, and I had another baby. And during delivery of that baby, when I was 28 years old, she was delivered at 6 o'clock in the evening, and they had put me to sleep. And when I woke up at 11 o'clock at shift change that night, I asked the nurse, could I get up out of bed? And she said, yes, you sure can. And I said, well, would you mind putting the light on? And she said, honey, the light's on. So I was totally blind. And we don't know what happened. I had retinal hemorrhages during delivery. And they honestly do not have any idea what caused them. So I am a total right now and have been for a number of years.
But you had not given any thought, I guess, whatsoever to losing vision. What a weird thing. I mean, just a tragic sort of thing. I'm sure you thought the same thing, and your husband and children that you already had thought the same thing. And they have no idea. You said, I think you said they had no idea what happened. All right. So you woke up in the hospital totally blind, and I guess after several days, the doctors told you there's nothing we can do to restore your eyesight. What did you think? What were your thoughts? Can you remember back then? I'm sure you thought that your world as a human being was over. Give us a kind of a synopsis of what you thought back then, if you remember.
Well, of course, it was a total, complete, absolute shock for me, because I had no earthly idea anything like that would ever happen to me. And like I said, I had 20/20 vision at that point. And to wake up total, it was a traumatic experience. And we had moved into a new house 2 days before Christmas. My little girl was born 2 days after Christmas. So I came home to a new house with a new baby, three other children, and a husband that couldn't do anything but boil water, and most of the time he burnt that. So I was kind of, I guess you'd say, in a state of shock.
Yeah.
But my feelings on that, and of course when I say this, a lot of people think I'm crazy, but if this had to happen to me, then it was a perfect time for it to happen, because I probably would have been one of these people that sit around with their hands folded in their lap saying, oh, woe is me, I can't handle this. But I couldn't do that, because I had a brand new human being that was totally dependent on me. So I couldn't sit there and feel sorry for myself. I had a little girl that I had to tend to. The other three children were important at that point, but my youngest, until the baby was born, he was 3 and a half when my little girl was born. The other two were, let's see, Karen was 9 and Sonny was 7. So they would have been able to basically tend to themselves. But this new infant was totally dependent on me, and I had to do it. And so far, I've done it. She's grown now. All of them are. In fact, I have two that I've lost through death. And but my two little ones are doing beautifully. My daughter has 4 beautiful little girls of her own now, and I have helped to raise them also.
Yeah, I guess people do sort of think that that's strange that you say this was if this was going to happen, it was a good time for it to happen to you. But we all get older and more mellow about things, and you may not have thought that then. Just one more question, and we'll move along from this. Did you have a parents, or your parents, or his parents, or an aunt, or an uncle, or any family members that could come and lend some assistance to you? And immediately contact, of course, this has been a long time ago. We don't want to give anybody's age away. But this was a good while ago. Did you contact the state, some state agencies and or federal agencies for help? And did you have any immediate family that could come in and help?
No, I didn't. I did call the state agencies, which was at that point called, this was in Louisiana, by the way. It was called Welfare for the Blind. And I did call them, and they came out and talked to me. But the only thing they could offer me was to go to what was then called Arkansas Interstate for the Blind. And, of course, I couldn't go because I had a new baby, and they wouldn't let me take any of my children with me. So I was stuck.
Yeah, state agencies, as we know, tend to think, well, you're blind, so what? You know, I've got a government job. I really could care less. All right, so you were able, through sheer dint of will, to master, I suppose, changing a diaper and warming a bottle. You had to learn those things. By the way, at what age were your other children at that time? Could any of them help you any at all?
No. I said Karen was 9, but she wasn't. She was 8. And Sonny was 6, and Lee was 3.5. So I really didn't have a lot of help there. It was left up to me. And, of course, the two older children were not mine. They were my husband's by a previous marriage that I was raising. And we had only had them for a couple of years. But they just weren't qualified, maybe I just didn't trust them enough. So I did it myself. And, of course, having had a baby as a sighted person, I remembered. Now, I stuck my hand. We had to use pins and cloth diapers back then. We didn't have Pampers. But I stuck myself numbers of times. But as far as sticking my baby, nope, never did. And I have to say, she was the most perfect baby in the whole wide world.
That's pretty amazing. What was your husband's reaction to this thing? What did he say?
Well, I'm sure a lot of people have found out through their own experiences. He was not a happy camper. And since then, of course, we have divorced. And he was of no help whatsoever, which is a terrible thing for me to say. But I had to make my own formulas back then. You know, for bottles, sterilizing bottles, and using powdered formula, and measuring this, and water, and the whole 9 yards, and he couldn't do that. He just didn't know how. So I had to teach myself how. And by the way, I have had no blind training at all. Everything that I have learned, I have taught myself, including mobility training.
Well, what a thing! What a almost think of it as a tragedy. But you made it through it. You were able to survive. All right. So when you got sort of stabilized as a blind person, were you ever gainfully employed after you lost your eyesight?
Yes, I was. I did a lot of volunteer work before I was gainfully employed. I was PTA president at one of the schools for 3 years, vice president at another, president of the Young Democrats Club in the parish. As I said, I lived in Louisiana. I worked with the school board and with what would be called city council but this was a parish council on ad hoc committees. And then later on, I did traffic reports on a radio station out of New Orleans for 10 years.
Well, whoa. You did traffic reports for a radio station in New Orleans. I'll be quiet. Tell me about that. You knew that was going to get me, being the radio nut that I am. Tell us, how did that come about? Obviously, you adjusted well to blindness if you did all this. But tell us about the blind people don't do a lot of traffic reports, Lynn.
No, we don't. It was really a shock. It came about in a way that's unbelievable. I had a CB radio, and I lived in a little town in Louisiana, right outside of New Orleans, called Kenner, Louisiana. And for some reason, I retained a lot of information in this little pea brain of mine, and I used to direct truck drivers to take them to where they needed to go, and I could back them up almost in their trucks to load or unload at the docks. And I used to do this. I'd get on my CB and do this. And one morning I was talking to this guy, and he asked me if I'd do him a favor, and I said, well, I'll try. He said, if I give you a phone number, will you call me? And I said, no. And a friend of mine happened to be on the CB at that time, and she called me on the phone, and she said, take the number, find out what he wants. I said, I don't do that. And she said, I know it, but just find out. So I did, and he asked me, did I want a job? And I said, doing what? And he said, doing traffic reports. And I said, well, I've never done anything like that before. He said, I've been listening to you for months, and I want to form my own company and hire you to do traffic reports. So I did, and I worked for him for 10 years.
Well, I forgot to turn my mic up. Well, I forgot at first that my mic is live all the time now. So now I think we know a little more about where this calm demeanor of yours comes from. I said in the interview the other day that no matter what happens on your onstage, your live programs that you host, you're very calm about it. You always tell us how good we did regardless of whether we did good or not. All right, so this was back, I guess, during the CB craze of the 70s. Am I right?
No, I did this between 1980 and 1990 for 10 years.
What was the what station were you on in New Orleans? Do you remember?
Oh, yes. I was on WCKW, 93 FM.
Oh, so this was after after FMs. But you were not working then. You were a stay-home mom then. How were you supporting yourself then?
Well, before I got the job, my total support was SSI, SSDI, and some minor child support for me and two kids.
But your husband left you, took his two kids with him, and left you with the two kids that you and he had, and you were their sole support for a while also, right?
No. I picked up my two kids and left him. The two older kids were already out of the house on their own. One was married, and the other was living with her and her husband. And then I had my two kids, and I picked them up and moved out.
All right. Very good. Very good. Okay, so you did traffic for a radio station. Did you never did you ever work, where else did you work, or did you?
No, I didn't. I quit the job in 90. My boss had a contract with the radio station for traffic. He was general manager and station manager and that sort of thing, and he got fired. But I was still working for him with a contract on the radio station. Now, I did my traffic reports from home. I had, like I said, a CB radio, and I had a police scanner. And I knew all of the state troopers and the sheriff's deputies and the New Orleans police. And I did traffic reports for 5 parishes. And if I missed anything in that area, one of the troopers or one of the parish deputies would get off the boulevard and let me know. They'd call me on the phone and let me know. And my report started at 5 o'clock in the morning because we had ferries in that area to go across the Mississippi. And I had to do a ferry report at 5 o'clock in the morning. And then I did regular traffic reports 4 times an hour from 6 to 9 in the morning and from 2:30 to 6 or later, depending on how the traffic was, in the evenings.
And none of these people who were driving their cars were aware that a blind person, totally blind person, was doing a traffic report. That's an amazing little story. Now, you were in Louisiana, and I can understand, living close to Louisiana, why you would move from Louisiana to Florida, but maybe people don't. How did you end up in Florida?
Well, I wound up in Florida after both of my children were grown, and one was married, well, she was divorced, and she moved over here. My son had moved over here, and I was living alone in my house in Laplace, Louisiana, which is a small town about 20 miles outside of New Orleans. And this was during the oil crisis, when the oil fields went down, and a lot of people in the subdivision worked in the oil industry, and they abandoned their homes. And the homes that they abandoned were picked up, of course, by their mortgage companies, by ER the bank or wherever. And they were being put on the market for, say, 10 cents on the dollar. And the undesirable people in the New Orleans section of town were picking up on these homes. And the house next door to me was broken into 3 times in 2 weeks, and the whole subdivision just turned into a major crack area. And my son came home for the weekend, and he said, "Mom, you can't stay here by yourself anymore." And I said, "But I don't want to go, I don't want to leave." And he said, "I don't care, you can't stay here." So I sold my house in Louisiana and moved to Florida in 1994.
Well, like I said, I can understand why you would move to Florida from New Orleans. I tell you, we're running kind of not out of time, but pretty close to the end here. Sounds like you, even though this was a tragic thing that happened to you as a young girl, you've dealt with it as we all have to do, whether you're born this way or whether you lose your eyesight a little later in life. You all have to have a blindness to deal with, and we all do it in different ways, and it sounds like you did fine with yours. Let's talk about this room that we're using in the brand new site. It's called, there's my striking clock, I think it's called Out of Sight, and the grand opening is this weekend, and I'm just going to release my key and let you tell us about the creation of it and the grand opening, Lynn.
All righty. It's a brand new site. It's not 2 months old yet. And the name of it, the site name is www.out-of-site, S-I-G-H-T, .net. And the room that we're in right now is called Tarzan and Jane. It's a two-party room. No one else can come in here except you and I. And the site is, like I said, it's not 2 months old yet, but we have a membership already of over 260 people. And it's an excellent site, and we're having our grand opening this weekend, March 1st and 2nd, from 12 o'clock noon on Saturday until 10 o'clock that night, and then again Sunday from 12 o'clock noon until 10 o'clock Sunday night. We've got all sorts of events scheduled. In fact, hopefully we'll have you, Mr. Parr, come in and maybe do an hour's worth of music for us between 4 and 6 o'clock. Saturday afternoon. And we will also have my show on at 8 o'clock Eastern Time on stage in the on stage room. And this is people who are members of the site who have excellent, excellent talent. They sing, they play musical instruments, and we just have a good time. And I'd love to have everybody come in and just come listen. Come have a good time with us. We'll have door prizes given away, and like I said, lots of good entertainment, lots of fun. You'll meet a lot of people and have a good time.
We will do that this weekend. I don't know who all is going to join, but you have time to join the site. It is, I don't know if you mentioned this or not, but it is free, absolutely free, and I think eventually will probably become one of the main gathering places for blind persons. Bruce Riddle is the I don't know what he is, but he's there, and he's sort of the ramrodding thing. Somebody has to be in charge. That's what my wife always says. Phil, the reason I'm in charge is because somebody has to be. And so we'll do that this weekend. I happen to think, Lynn, when we get off, we'll talk a little more about that. If I recorded my thing, then I wouldn't care when they, you know, then it could, all I'd have to do is start it. I wouldn't have to sit there. Anyway, we'll talk about that in a minute. But Out of Sight Communities, let me get to have Lynn give you the address one more time, and we'll sign off here. And Lynn, this is the first time in a long time I've been alone with a woman I wasn't married to in a room, and it's been a thrill. There's my telephone. Give us the address one more time, Lynn, and thank you much, and I'll see you over the weekend. Hang on.
Okay, it's www.out-of-sight.net.